Chapter 1975, Yaz, Hank Stram, and Notre Dame. The game. Boston Red Sox 6, Baltimore Orioles 5 in 12 innings. At Memorial Stadium in Baltimore, 38,655 fans in attendance on Friday, April 11th, 1975. It was cloudy and 50 degrees. Hall of Famers, Orioles manager Earl Weaver, and third baseman Brooks Robinson, Red Sox first baseman Carl Yastrzemski, and left fielder Jim Rice. Game highlights. Fans back in New England listening to this game on radio were gleeful, no, tearful, as two of their most iconic Red Sox, Tony Conigliaro and Carl Yastrzemski, both homered. Yastrzemski's came in the 12th off pitcher Doyle Alexander, then in his sixth inning of relief work. But it was Tony C's blast off starter Mike Cuellar in the fifth that truly stirred the heart of Red Sox Nation. Conigliaro had been the brightest star of his generation in 1967 when he was hit in the face by a pitch at Fenway Park. The gruesome injury to his left cheek and retina was so severe, it was generally assumed the career of the youngest American League player ever to hit 100 homers was over. After missing the entire 1968 season, Conigliaro mounted an improbable comeback in 1969, belting 60 more homers before retiring after the 1971 season, saying his eyesight had deteriorated. In early 1975, when 30-year-old Conigliaro and the Red Sox announced he was going to give it one more try, hearts swelled. His opening day homer in Baltimore was special beyond words. His second comeback was brief, but inspiring. After just 21 games, Conigliaro was sent down to Pawtucket, his major league career over. The story. Football fans of a certain age will remember Hall of Fame coach Hank Stram, who guided the Kansas City Chiefs through their first glory years in the 1960s and 70s before working in the CBS broadcast booth well into the 1990s. And baseball fans certainly know of the legendary stature of Boston Red Sox Hall of Famer Carl Yastrzemski, or perhaps more recently of his grandson Mike of the San Francisco Giants. What may surprise both fan groups is their brief overlap for a year in South Bend, Indiana, and their reunion more than 25 years later. Let's start with Yaz. We generally don't think of Major League Baseball players of the 1950s or 60s as having attended college. Before the amateur draft was instituted in 1966, acquiring young talent was a free-for-all among Major League scouts, scouring the country in search of can't-miss talent. Teams would dangle huge sums of money in front of teenage standouts and their parents in hopes of securing them for life. Remember, at the time, thanks to the reserve clause, once a player signed with a team, he was theirs forever. Carl's eyes were on baseball. His dad had other ideas. Young Carl's kitchen cabinet consisted of two men, his father, Carl Sr., and Father Joe Retkowski, their pastor at St. Jerome's Church. As a 17-year-old senior at Bridgehampton High in the spring of 1957, I would have signed for any amount I was offered if it had been up to me, recalled Yastrzemski in his 1968 autobiography, Yaz. But it wasn't up to me. As a minor, I couldn't sign anything. Dad was the boss, and behind him was Father Joe. He was more than just a baseball fan, an outstanding athlete in his youth. He could have been a professional baseball player if he hadn't chosen the priesthood. My parents had decided not to accept any big league baseball offers at that time unless somebody came up with those magic six figures Father Joe had been talking about, $100,000. Nor would my family consider scholarship offers from anywhere except Notre Dame. At a time before the National Collegiate Athletic Association frowned upon such things, Yastrzemski had plenty of impressive college scholarship offers, including most New York area schools, Duke, and Miami. Major league teams made offers too, including the Yankees, but at less than half the figure Dad demanded. Among the college offers, Notre Dame was not young Carl's first choice. Other colleges came up with some fantastic packages that included, besides the conventional board, room, tuition, books, and laundry, spending money up to $100 a month, a complete new wardrobe, an apartment of my own, and a car. I had never owned even a jalopy, never had more than one suit, never slept in a room by myself. And although Dad let me keep what I earned in the fields, I never had anywhere near $100 a month to spend. Not being fussy about Notre Dame as Mom and Dad, I wanted to grab one of those fancy scholarships. What difference will it make if I don't go to Notre Dame? I asked Dad. A college education is a college education. Why can't I go to the place it offers the most? Because Notre Dame is the best Catholic college in the country, he said. I don't even see why I have to go to a Catholic college. Well, I do, he said. So does your mother. And if Father Joe can arrange it, it will be Notre Dame. In the fall of 1957, Yastrzemski enrolled at Notre Dame. In the summer of 1980, Bill Marquard, a sports writer for Notre Dame's student newspaper, The Observer, sat down with Yaz, then in the twilight of his 23-year big league career. He reflected on his time in South Bend. The things I remember most about Notre Dame are the high academic standards and the strict discipline. The work I did in high school was nothing like the studies I did at Notre Dame. Now on to Stram. Notre Dame's football team, meanwhile, was a perennial top 20 team in the late 1950s. They had hired Southern Methodist University assistant Hank Stram to coach the backfield. He would spend 2 years with the Fighting Irish and one more season as a college assistant before being hired by Lamar Hunt as the first coach of his Dallas Texans of the new American Football League, which would later merge with the National Football League. Hunt's Texans moved to Kansas City in 1963. In 15 seasons, Stram led the franchise to 3 AFL titles, 1 Super Bowl IV, and in 2003 was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Before his year at SMU, Stram had coached 8 seasons at his alma mater, Purdue, the last 5 of which, 1951-55, he doubled as head baseball coach. It was during his final season coaching the Boilermakers that a certain high school ball player in New England likely caught his attention. As a fellow Polish-American, Stram was quite fond of young Yaz, and the two wound up on the same Indiana campus for the 1957-58 school year. Quote, being a freshman, Yastrzemski was ineligible for the varsity squad when he arrived in South Bend, Marquard explained in his April 1981 opening day article for The Observer. He thus came under the watchful eye of Jim Gibbons, then the freshman baseball coach. I must admit that it was pretty easy to look at Carl as a freshman and realize he was a cut above everybody else, remembers Gibbons. He did everything so effortlessly. The freshman team's primary role was to scrimmage against the varsity. Even there, Yastrzemski made his mark. In one intra-squad game, he reportedly hit a ball more than 500 feet into the adjacent football practice field where it rolled to the feet of the Fighting Irish backfield coach. Yastrzemski hit that, didn't he? Stram asked. Marquard summarized the final chapters of Carl's time in South Bend. Quote, Yastrzemski inked a Sox contract midway through his sophomore year at Notre Dame. With baseball occupying much of the spring and summer, Yastrzemski began attending Notre Dame for the first term of each school year in order to graduate. Even after marrying the former Carol Casper, Yastrzemski returned to campus for the fall semesters of 1960 and 1961. But it just became too much of a burden to move all the time, what with spring training, then the regular season, then Notre Dame. I finished the equivalent of my junior year at Notre Dame before I finally called it quits. Yastrzemski completed his degree in business administration in 1966 at Merrimack College in Massachusetts. More than a quarter century later, Stram and Yastrzemski were reunited. Stram was inducted into the National Polish-American Sports Hall of Fame in 1985. Yastrzemski joined him there the following year. For box scores, play-by-play, Karl Yastrzemski's Sabre.org bio, and a link to the National Polish-American Sports Hall of Fame, visit openingday5050.com.